This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour here in our nation's capital. It's the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Wizards basketball going on at Capital One Arena right now. Tied up at 57 apiece, 220 and change left to go in the first half. Wizards playing an inspired first half of basketball. They were down early in the opening quarter, but they've continued to battle back, scratching, clawing, giving good effort defensively. Tristan Vukovic and Corey Kispert off the bench right now, giving the Wizards, and the Spurs for that matter, everything that they can handle. Vukovic 6-9 for 14 points in 10 minutes, and then Corey Kispert 10 points, 3-5 from beyond the arc in just 14 minutes. So Wizards getting pretty solid bench production as they hold a one-point lead right now over the San Antonio Spurs. All about the bench mob, man. Starters not shooting it particularly well. Jordan Poole just 1-7. Bub Carrington 0-3 after his career high the other night. But the Wizards not letting the poor shooting stop them, man. They continue to play well here. We'll keep you up to speed all night long on the Wizards and Spurs. Right now, I'm going to go back out to the phone. Super Bowl 59 was last night, and it was a good old-fashioned butt-whipping. Philadelphia all over Kansas City. It was one of the most dominating defensive efforts I've ever seen. If you're just joining the show, I had a stat earlier that may knock your damn socks off. It kind of just encapsulates just how dominant Philadelphia was last night. This was a snapshot of the box score last night with 2:40 left to go in the third quarter. With 2:40 left to go in the third quarter last night, Philadelphia was up 34-0. They had outgained Kansas City 299-65. Huh? And then they had 18 first downs compared to just 3 from Kansas City. So as dominating of a performance as you will see on the defensive side of the football, I haven't seen Pat Mahomes and his Chiefs offense look like that. Vic, I don't know if it was you or a caller that brought it up, and I think it kind of jogged my memory perfectly because I'm trying to think, like, have I ever seen Pat look this bad? I go back to that Bucs Super Bowl, and he didn't even look that bad in that game. He was just under a considerable amount of duress, but he was able to get outside the pocket, make throws. Tyreek Hill dropped that ball that went off his face mask. Like, this to me, you know, wasn't all about Pat Mahomes either. Pat wasn't good, and I'm not going to sit here and try to make excuses for him. I consider him to be one of the greatest of all time, even after last night's, you know, letdown performance, but it wasn't all about Pat to me. This morning, everyone's singing the praises of Vic Fangio, 38 years in the National Football League, never won a Super Bowl. Now he's got the hardware, but his adversary, his counterpart last night, one of the most respected offensive minds in the history of the National Football League, Andy Reid, in my opinion, was a no-show. Andy Reid was a no-show last night. Where were the options for Pat Mahomes? And I know people are going to say, well, if he's such a good quarterback, Linnell, he'll make his own checks at the line of scrimmage, the way Tom Brady did, right? That's fair. I can hear that. But I still look at Andy Reid and go, man, how are you going to help Pat Mahomes? This offense was in football hell last night. That's the best way I can describe it. Their offense was in football hell.
There was no creativity also.
At all.
That looked like preseason bland football, that vanilla. I didn't want to show you anything until week one kind of football.
In the biggest game of the year.
Where was the bag of tricks? At that point, the time to throw the bag of tricks is right there when the offense is sputtering at that point.
For sure. We've seen it the last couple of years too, right? A hot dog and whatever red zone fancy play they run. Where was that last night? You damn right. And I just think, I go back to it. I said it earlier, man. I go back to the beginning of the game. Their first third down, mind you, and I got the numbers here on their third downs from last night. Did someone delete the tweet? Oh, Hembo deleted wow. It must have been some bad information. Hembo deleted the tweet. This is Paul Hembo of ESPN, their stats and info guy. The Chiefs started off 0-8 on third down last night. Their average yard to go was 10. And their first third down of the game, it was kind of showing you, hey, this may not be that Pat Mahomes tonight. Travis Kelce going across the middle, a routine play that we see all the time, finds the soft spot in the zone, sits down, but Patrick Mahomes was errant with the throw. Mind you, he was under pressure, but you saw it right there that the pressure was going to impact Mahomes. Now, this is where I get on Pat. Yes, the pressure was out of this world, from the interior, from the edge. They didn't blitz once last night, which is incredible. Second time in the modern era that's happened. But that four-man pressure combined with seven guys, that four-man pressure combined with seven guys in coverage, Pat Mahomes' mechanics dwindled to a point where he looked like a rookie quarterback. And that, to me, is where I'm going to get on Mahomes. And like I said, if he would have won yesterday, I would have came on here saying he's the greatest of all time. But I think after last night, from a mechanics standpoint, he wasn't as good as I was accustomed to seeing. He got skittish. His feet were uncomfortable. He was looking at the rush. And it just looked like a quarterback. The best way I could put it, man, it looked like a quarterback that was completely in over his skis. And we're talking about one of the greatest of all time. One of the greatest of all time feeling that way. Does it change your perception, though, of Pat Mahomes? 1-800-636-1067. They got dominated up front. They did. Talking about Kansas City. It's hard to have any type of success when you're under duress that much. But adjustments have to be made. Both coaching staffs get paid. And it felt like only one made adjustments. Melvin's in D.C. What's up, Melvin?
Thanks, Linnell, man. I call you the guru, man. You the young guru of this here.
I appreciate you, man.
You get I like your standpoints. I like how you articulate your wording and everything, man. But I'm gonna give it to you straight and narrow, man. Listen, that goes to show you what pressure does without sending the blitz.
For sure.
I don't care how good you may think you are, but on yesterday. Nah, Philly wasn't having it. See, we got to look at upgrading our defensive line and not just upgrade your defensive line. You need some dogs. You need to create that dog. You don't always got to go out and find that dog that's already been out there on somebody else's team and hoping this dog get on your team and turn into a beast. But guess what? That's different. See, you got to understand Myles Garrett holding the trump card right now because he's not looking to go to a team where he's the main focus on the front four. That's why he's looking at Philly, Dallas. And guess what, though? Here's the kicker. Kansas City know how to make trades, man.
Yeah, they know how to. They're going to upgrade their roster way or another. I give you that.
They're going to upgrade their roster. But I tell you this, if we can tweak our defensive line and just add a little bit of mean streak to the offensive line, we'll be right back there because we got the nucleus. We got the nucleus. We got a good defensive coordinator,
for
good
sure.
OC, all that. We just need some dogs right now. And we got a dog at the quarterback position. But I'm going to tell you this. Philly is man. But I don't
They got a different ground today, Lord. They bark, don't they, brother? I feel you.
Man,
it's different. It's different.
Man, them kids was out there, man, manhandling them.
Brother, I said it like this, brother. I said it like this. It's like somebody coming to your home. I don't know if you're married or not, if you got kids. It's like somebody coming in your home. It's like somebody coming in your home, telling your kids when the hell to go to bed, pulling up your bourbon, smacking your wife on the ass, all up in your refrigerator, walk around man. Late at night in their drawers. I mean, it was just disrespectful. Man, was it, you remember Baby Boy? It's as disrespectful as Baby Boy was, man.
Man, I told my son at the end of the second quarter, I said, look, if Kansas City don't score before halftime, it's over.
Yeah. Yep.
Point blank. I said, it's over. Because Philly ain't let up.
No.
They didn't let up.
Came
out and threw the bomb.
Man, and the crazy thing about it is they stopped Saquon Barkley, Melvin. I appreciate the call as always, brother. 1-800-636-1067. Halftime at our nation's capital, 66-63 San Antonio on top of Washington. As I promised, we'd keep you up to speed all night long. Elsewhere in the association tonight, the return of Luka Doncic, the debut of Luka Doncic with the L.A. Lakers, 10:30 tip-off, Lakers in Jazz. And I got this tweet notification via ESPN, Dirk Nowitzki in the house tonight. He had become sort of a older brother, big brother mentor to Luka Doncic. Tonight, the first time Dallas, or I guess it was the other night, the first time the Mavericks will take the floor without Luka and Dirk, first time since 98. So for them to have two back-to-back generational franchise-altering players is amazing. But they tip off a little bit later. Wizards down 3 to San Antonio. Victor Wembanyama, double-double in the first half, 18-10. He's got 2 assists, 2 steals as well. For the Wizards, it's a bench mob party, man. The Wizards with, what was that, 24, 31, 35 points off the bench for the Wizards. Tristan Vukovic leading all bench scorers with 14. As we go back out to the phones, 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Emory Hunt going to join the program coming up at 8:30. Our NFL analyst from CBS going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl. We'll actually take a quick timeout. When we come back, more of your calls next. 1-800-636-1067, the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Get you up to speed here quickly with the Washington Wizards. They're down 3 at the half against San Antonio. Their bench mob, though, giving them superb production. 14 points from Tristan Vukovic in 10 minutes. 10 points from Corey Kispert. In 14 minutes. Justin Champagne, 7 points in 5 minutes. So the Wizards getting it done off the bench. We'll see how well they're able to perform here in the second half as they try to fend off Victor Wembanyama and company. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, our pal Emory Hunt covers the NFL for CBS Sports HQ. He is going to join us. We get his thoughts on the big game as well as look ahead to the NFL draft and get his thoughts on how Washington should be attacking what I continue to call the most pivotal offseason of this rebuild. How is Adam Peters and company going to retool this roster to try and compete with the badass Philadelphia Eagles, man? After their performance last night, dominating the Kansas City Chiefs in every facet of the football game, especially up front with the big ends in the trenches, how does Washington retool this roster? How do you feel about the Commanders heading into next year after yesterday's Super Bowl? And then does last night, in a game in which he registers his second lowest quarterback rating of his career, does last night change your perception of Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes? Athan is in Annapolis. What's going on, Athan?
Let me tell you something. That beatdown was so bad, they didn't even need Saquon last night. They could have put Shipley in there, and it would have been the same thing. Yeah. No, my opinion of Mahomes hasn't changed, because even as bad as he played, that game was over as soon as Bradley Cooper introduced that team. The Eagles had that look in their eye. I don't know what it was, if it was getting beat from the previous Super Bowl. Exactly. I mean, you talk about a beatdown, and I remember what Tampa did to them, but this looked like a Swedish massage compared to what they did to them last night. I mean, you talk about a total ass whipping. But as far as the Redskins,
oh my God!
Listen, I would come up with good ones. See, your ratings just went through the roof.
Evan, you my man, young. You my man. Good gracious.
Hey, hey. But as far as us, no. Listen, we're as far as our season. Listen, we did great, but we're not playing bad teams next year, okay? We got a lot of good teams we're going to play, and that's good because I want to get better, but you want to see how you build a team? Look how big, athletic, and strong, and fast Philly's offensive and defensive lines are, and then they traded up with us to get Cooper DeJean, and they got Quinyon Mitchell. Howie Roseman, I mean, he does it right. It doesn't mean that we can't do it too, but we got to take advantage of it now. But you want to see how to build a team. I mean, those guys were on a mission last night, and it doesn't change my perception of Mahomes, though, because it was over before it even started.
Yeah, I think it's well put. I'm glad you brought up Howie Roseman because I guess people get annoyed on social media when I refer to him as the best exec in pro sports. I don't think it's very close. When you think about it, and I sent the tweet to myself, and I meant to say this earlier in the show, you got to think about the brass balls this guy has to trade Carson Wentz fresh off of signing him to a franchise-altering contract, and the Carson Wentz trade ends up getting them picks that turn into Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Jalen Carter, and Cooper DeJean. So some people are playing chess in the front office. Others are playing checkers. Athan, I appreciate you tapping in. As always, 1-800-636-1067. I've been meaning to break that out, the old bag of tweets. I couldn't believe it. Think about the current or the landscape of Philadelphia when that trade was made. They had just went to the Super Bowl. Obviously, Wentz gets hurt late in that regular season. They pay him the contract that offseason, I believe. He then goes 500. Throws a bunch of interceptions, clearly looked like a shell of himself. But I thought normally in a situation like that, right, you go, okay, it's one bad year of Carson Wentz. How do we fix and retool the roster around him? Howie says, no. I like this kid in the second round out of Alabama. I remember when they first drafted him, there was, oh, no, Carson's got nothing to worry about. We want to have a backup, a good backup for him. Jalen Hurts, when he was drafted, had starters mentality on his mind, and I think it's been very clear to see, you know, since he's taken over, what type of dude he is upstairs. He's got the right mental makeup. Say what you want about him as a passer. I continue to call him a $200 million running back. Say what you want about him as a passer. I think he's just got the right temperament to be a team's franchise quarterback. And you get to see it each and every week. I give him a lot of crap because I think he's the most insulated quarterback in football. I don't think the Eagles ask him to do much. But the little that they ask him to do, he thrives with it. And you saw it last night, taking off at the right time, understanding when to use his legs, understanding pre-snap. That, to me, was the thing that got me with Jalen Hurts last night. It felt like they were a step ahead of Kansas City in the pass game. And I give KC the excuse of, oh, I know it's tough when in the game plan is, hey, how are we going to sell out to stop Saquon Barkley? And they did a masterful job slowing down Saquon Barkley. He was not much of a factor in that football game. 25 carries for 57 yards. You take away his 10-yard run, it's 24 carries for 47 yards. So he wasn't very good last night. They shut him down. And I think the fact that they sold out to shut him down, I think it neutralized their pass rush in turn. Because if you're George Karloftis, if you're Willie Gay, if you're Chris Jones, you're not hauling ass getting upfield to try and chase the quarterback. You're playing the run on the way to the quarterback. And when you got Philly's big offensive line that's moving people out of the way that they do, yeah, pick your poison, man. 1-800-636-1067, the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL underscore BTP. We'll go back to Mark in Charles County. What's up, Mark?
Hello.
What's going on, Mark? How you doing?
Hey, man. Yeah, I'm not mad that Philly won the Super Bowl. I'm glad that they trounced Kansas City because just like Tom Brady brought up that he lost against NFC these teams. And that's the only thing I'll take away from, Pat Mahomes. He didn't, grow up against, NFC East teams, whether we're good or bad. I mean, he was in that softest spot in the AFC West. I'll just point out Buffalo, who's supposed to be the maddest team at Kansas City. They were helping him up after he scrambled 17 yards for a first down. They were helping him up. We were getting personal foul penalties, hitting Barkley, questionable. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
That physicality, that's the only thing I'll take away from Kansas City, because it worked on him. It worked on Brady three times, Giants twice, and the Eagles. It was just much more physical. That's the only thing I'll, they win, they whatever, but they didn't come through us twice a year for 7 years and
right.
Win a division 9 years in a row. Just like, hey, come on, that's cotton candy. The same
would you call it cotton candy?
Yeah, they're the same as Detroit. I mean, when have you ever been afraid of Detroit? I just can't get myself to be afraid of Detroit. Yeah. So, those type of teams. But clearly we're behind the Eagles. I'm glad they're in front of us. And I appreciate you bringing out that front office thing, because next year we can't keep, laddering our front office. Oh, they're the great. No, we got a monster in front of us.
Yes.
No more compliments until we beat that monster. Oh, the great. Anybody. That'd be, the great. I could have picked Jake Daniels. Other than that, they're smoking us. You know that, right?
So look, you're not wrong at all.
Let's go. I mean, we're okay. It's a good season, but I'm glad they won. And they're in front of us. So no more compliments until we get them. Simple as that.
I think it's a fair rule of thumb, Mark. I appreciate the call, as always. 1-800-636-1067, the number on the MGM National Harbor List of Lines. You can tweet at me as well. It is at @NELL_BTP. Plenty more to get to. About an hour and change left to go on the program here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. Coming up, we'll go to the guest hotline for the first time this show. Our pal Emory Hunt, NFL analyst for CBS Sports HQ, joins us next. Still rocking and rolling here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. It's the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to before we send you off. Quick update on the Wizards and Spurs as we continue to keep you up to speed with that. Victor Wembanyama going Kanye crazy in the opening quarter. He simmered down a little bit. 21 points on 8 of 14 shooting, 4 of 7. From the great beyond, he's got 11 boards, 2 helpers, 2 steals, and a block. So another shocker, right? Stat sheet stuffing performance from Victor Wembanyama. We mentioned it, busy night in the association. Andrew Wiggins going to make his Miami Heat debut tonight. Luka Doncic going to make his Laker debut tonight. And it is a raucous environment out at Crypto.com Arena. 77 T-shirts on every seat in the building. So excited to get home and watch that one. Right now, we go out to the Rude Guest Hotline, where we find one of my absolute favorites, one of the most knowledgeable guys talking all things NFL and college football. It is NFL and college football analyst for CBS Sports HQ, my guy Emory Hunt. You can give him a follow on the X app at FBall Game Plan. Emory, what's going on, brother? Happy New Year. Am I late saying Happy New Year? It's been a while, man.
I know, man. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate you bringing me on.
I appreciate you giving us some time, my friend. I'll obviously love to catch up with you. Want to start with the big game from last night. I was screaming from the mountaintops, Emory, if Pat Mahomes wins his third consecutive bowl, I'm getting a lot louder with the GOAT conversation. It was the exact opposite. Dominating performance on both sides of the line of scrimmage from the Philadelphia Eagles. It leads to Mahomes registering his second worst QBR and a start in his career. Your main takeaway from last night, and does your perception of Patrick Mahomes change at all?
Not at all. He's still a great player. I feel like the ring culture and legacy culture of NBA talk has kind of spoiled what we had here in the NFL.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Rings and championships and just not appreciating great play.
Yeah.
Losses happen. We've seen, good quarterbacks lose in big games. We saw Frank Tarkenton lose 4 Super Bowls. We saw Jim Kelly lose 4 Super Bowls. That doesn't mean they're not great players. We saw Tom Brady lose a couple of Super Bowls. So it was just one of those things where last night, it wasn't the Chiefs' day. Doesn't take away from who Pat Mahomes is and what he has accomplished so far in his career, which is still in and of itself one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's tough, man. And Pat, obviously a special player. Do you remember, though, Emery, you've watched a lot of Super Bowls and you've covered the game for a while. I don't remember the last time a front four put belt to ass to another offensive line the way that Philadelphia did last night, man. It was off the edge. It's from the interior. Josh Sweat winning at the point of attack. Jalix Hunt winning at the point of attack. I mean, it just shows you why it's important to have a litany of rushers. But do you remember the last time an offensive line was dominated that way?
A few years ago when Tampa did it to Kansas City.
Yeah.
In that Super Bowl, the COVID Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes couldn't get anything off in that ball game, which caused the Chiefs to then in the offseason totally revamp that offensive line. That's when they went ahead and got Creed Humphrey. That's when they got Trey Smith. And so I would expect them to do the same thing going into this offseason, realizing, hey, we got to get better at tackle and make sure we are not caught in a bad situation like we were against a team like Philadelphia, because that could have happened against Baltimore.
Yep.
It happened against Philly. It could have happened against any team that had a defensive line like the Rams that could really get after it and it has depth. And so Philly just, was one of those teams where it was a bad matchup up front. But we've seen this recently, more recently in 2020.
Yeah, I agree with you, Emery. It's a big reason why, man, in the wild card round, the second round, rather, I'm looking at Houston like, man, I think Houston's got a real shot. When you think about who they had up front and how they were able to get after the quarterback in waves, I thought that game would be a lot tighter than what it was. But obviously up front was the Achilles heel of the Kansas City Chiefs. And you mentioned their struggles at tackle. Joe Thuney, who they kicked out to tackle after having him at guard most of the year, just didn't look like he was ready for what Philly was bringing off of the edge. And It was honestly uncomfortable to watch, man. And I don't know if I'm maybe hyperbolizing it, but like as a football fan, somebody that's played at the collegiate level, watching a group just get manhandled like that up front, you begin to start worrying about the safety of the quarterback. And just watching it, man, it was hell on wheels, man. Do you look at this Eagles front? They've got Josh Sweat, that's a pending free agent. Brandon Graham maybe calling it a career. When you look at this draft class and how deep the D-line group is, do you see them being able to just retool coming up this spring?
Absolutely. It's why they are who they are and why they were in this ball game two out of the last 4 years is because they understand how to utilize the draft and also how to develop talent, because this is something that I brought up in the pregame show and I brought up in the postgame as well. When you look at what the Philadelphia Eagles do, this time last year, folks were saying, man, they wasted a pick on Nolan Smith. They wasted a pick on N'Kobe Dean. They wasted is Jordan Davis really worth the first-round pick? He's barely playing. But now look at this year. Yeah. All three of those guys played significant roles and were outstanding. Why? Because they drafted the talent. These guys were supremely talented coming out of college. They gave them a year to get developed and to get acclimated to their way of doing things. And so now they are frontline starters. So it wouldn't surprise me to see next year someone like Sidney Brown step up at safety, or someone like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. to have a more increased role on defense. So, yes, they draft, they develop, and they allow those guys to really get out there and flourish when they are ready. So I would expect them to continue to do the same things on both sides of the line of scrimmage, O-line and D-line.
Emery, you obviously, understand X's and O's better than, a lot of different folks that I talk to. How much of an onus do you put on Andy Reid for last night? Because it felt like, okay, clearly they're winning with four, but it didn't feel like there was any offensive adjustment. We saw them try to attack vertically, and I thought that would be what loosens up this Philly defense. But, that's Vic Fangio's calling card, man. They'll let you get whatever in between the 20s. They're not giving up the big play over the top. Did you think the Chiefs' offensive coaching staff adjusted from a play-calling standpoint to make life easier for Pat?
I didn't, and it was more so from a formation standpoint. I brought this up at halftime. You know, if you know they're getting to you with four and you're in the gun and you can't really get the passes off and you have these long developing routes, why not just go what we call ace formation, you know, two tight ends, and kind of widen out those rushes and just go to running the football. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Go out there with two tight ends, two wide receivers, and just run the ball. Because at the end of the day, you're going to calm down that rush. You want to turn those pass rushers into run defenders, and it helps that offensive line gain some confidence. Yeah. But by you saying in three, four, five wide receiver sets and in the gun, you're still you're exacerbating the problem. You're allowing these dudes to continue to tee off. And with that rotation, now you have fresh defenders going up against tired, non-confident offensive linemen that has gotten beat all game, and it just made the offense look progressively worse as the game went on.
Yeah, it was ugly to watch. Our guy Hembo from ESPN was putting out some pretty interesting stats. There's a snapshot of the third quarter with 2:40 left after the Chiefs had had 10 offensive possessions, outscored 34-0, outgained 299-65, and then Philly 18 first downs to just 3 for Kansas City. So just an all-time beatdown that just didn't look very competitive. As we begin to look forward to the offseason for not just the Eagles and the Chiefs, but for the entirety of the National Football League, I bring it local here for a second, Emery. The Commanders, the last team to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, and to think that Washington had the success that they were able to have offensively, marching the football up and down the field. If you were looking at this from the Commanders' perspective, Emery, what is your number one takeaway from watching Super Bowl 59?
That you have enough already to make something happen moving forward. And if you just add one more piece offensively and continue to find some ways to add rotational depth on defense, you'll be just fine. I do feel like Washington can come out of this draft with a dynamic player at running back and in free agency or draft, a fantastic receiver to pair up with Terry McLaurin. And this is a draft that is going to be big on depth because of the COVID year and guys that have, you know, are now done with college their 6th or 7th season and really have a chance to stockpile that roster and be a significant player in the NFC, you know, as a whole, not just the NFC East. So Washington has to feel good about themselves. They have one of those guys at quarterback, and the energy that permeates from the head coach to both sides of the ball, they'll be a consistent nuisance in the East Division for a long time.
I think that's the hope for a lot of folks here locally, man. You hit it right on the head. You've got the quarterback situation figured out. Now it's about filling out the roster around Jaden Daniels. I consider a bona fide stud on a rookie contract in the NFL to be one of the best assets in all of professional sports. I want to focus toward the draft a little bit more, Emery. Washington needs not only pass-rushing help, but what I would describe it as, Emery, is a three-down defensive end, someone that's not just going to play the pass and be an edge rusher, someone that can set the edge as well. Dante Fowler, they're going to probably lose in free agency. He had the quietest 10.5 sack season you'll ever see. He didn't play much in the NFC Championship game for the reason I mentioned. He struggles to set the edge. I know it's a deep class when it comes to the guys up front. Are there a couple of names that you really like for Washington, either at that number 29 pick or later in the draft where they've got 2 third-rounders and a couple of fifths as well?
You know, I'm still pouring through the scouting part right now, so okay. I don't have any names, you know, on top of my head. Right now I'm just grading wide receivers. I've done quarterback, I've done running back, but I haven't really done anything else just yet because I'm still working through that process because I get started late. But I will say this, you know, what I love about what Washington did in their first season under Dan Quinn was identify football players. You know, they didn't look at size, they didn't look at, you know, height, weight, speed. Yeah, all that stuff kind of matters. Mm-hmm. But, man, when you get a Sam Rasil, you get a Jaden Daniels, you just get dudes that put up buckets, right? Yeah. That just, you know, so if you're able to have that approach once again, I have no doubt in my mind Washington can find those players because it seems like they're on the same accord now from ownership to GM to head coach to scouts. and everyone is on the same page on what works and what we need to go and move forward.
We're joined right now by NFL and college football analyst for CBS Sports HQ, Emory Hunt. Give him a follow on the X app at F-Ball Game Plan. As we get geared up for free agency, obviously the coaching carousel continues to spin. Kellen Moore expected to be officially introduced as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, so all of the jobs are filled. When it comes to the first-year head coaches, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Pete Carroll, Mike Vrabel out in New England, which of these first-year head coaches do you think is best primed to have success maybe here in year one out the gate?
I would say Aaron Glenn, based off what the Jets have. I mean, they three good running backs. They have a fantastic collection of talent on defense. Got a lockdown corner. The offensive line, I think, is better than people believe because they can run the football. So you've got some talent at wide receiver. Quarterback play is going to be interesting because we know they're probably going to move on from Aaron Rodgers. And the fact that they are right now on their staff, on their roster, you have a Tyrod Taylor who we know is a great leader and players love playing for him and with him. So he can kind of steady the ship. But it also makes them kind of interesting in terms of, okay, do they go and draft someone, maybe a Jalen Milroe? Maybe they go and Jordan Travis is further along in his recovery.
Well, that's the thing I was going to ask. Is Jordan Travis coming back to the fold healthy? Emory, if he didn't have the ankle injury looming over his draft status last year, how were you evaluating him compared to the rest of the quarterbacks?
He was my number four quarterback in that class behind Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels. I was a big Spencer Rattler guy as my QB3. Travis was my QB4. Travis was playing phenomenal football. And if he doesn't get hurt, I think Florida State wins the national championship last year. And because the injury was so gruesome, you kind of thought, okay, this is a redshirt year. Now, I know later in the season they said he had a little bit of a setback.
Yeah.
So who knows where he is now in terms of the recovery. But, man, if he can get back to what he did the past last year in terms of college football, that's someone to keep an eye on. So the Jets are interesting in terms of quarterback, but I like Aaron Glenn's makeup. I like what they have in place. I do think the Jets could be a surprise in the AFC East.
One thing that's going to, I think, kind of shape the landscape of the NFL offseason is the quarterback position. There are a lot of quarterback needy teams. Didn't necessarily a draft class that's super deep. When you look at a team like the Vegas Raiders, who or the Minnesota Vikings, who are going to be in the market for a quarterback if J.J. McCarthy doesn't come back healthy. There are a couple of teams, Emory, that are like on the cusp of being a potential, you know, playoff team, but they got to address quarterback. When you look at some of the veteran options out there, do you view Sam Darnold as kind of the top of the list? And if not, is there another guy that kind of entices you to come in and be a bridge guy?
Well, if we're talking bridge guy, Russell Wilson and or Sam Darnold would be options. But the thing with Sam Darnold, if I'm him, what makes his case unique, he was a top first-round pick. So he has the financial security already. So why wouldn't he stay in Minnesota? Because if you're Minnesota, you're like, wait a minute, we had success with Sam Darnold. We don't have to really rush J.J. McCarthy out there. He was, what, 20 years old, 21 years old when he drafted him?
Yeah.
So he was one of the younger quarterback prospects. So we have the luxury of time. So therefore, we don't have to rush him out there because what could happen? We don't know how healthy he's going to be coming off the injury or how effective he's going to be. Everybody recovers differently. And also, when you think about, we just had a 14-win season with this guy. Now the pressure of J.J. McCarthy having to either come close or exceed 14 wins is going to be insane because it'll be his first season fully as a starter. And we don't know how good he is yet. So why not allow him that time of recovery and learn the system, go that Jordan Love route. So therefore you can get a good friendly deal with Sam Darnold, who probably wants to stay with this scheme and these players. And, you know, so that therefore you have a better fit there. Raiders, I think Russ could be a good fit in terms of a bridge guy because I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers will keep Justin Fields because he has more upside, younger, faster, more explosive, all that stuff that in the team seems to like Justin Fields. So Russ would be available, but has he mended that relationship with him and Pete Carroll?
That's the big question, right? And we clearly that would have to be fixed for him to end up out in Vegas. I know there are people that question whether or not that situation is salvageable, but you make an interesting point. I think Pete Carroll's obviously coming in trying to win right away. Older coach, doesn't have much time to kind of fart around and rebuild a team. But another interesting situation that I point to and go, yeah, that group is going to be able to exceed expectations and probably win quicker than people are giving them credit for. If Liam Cohen, Emery, can solve the riddle of Trevor Lawrence at quarterback and get him playing at a top 12 to 15 level, how much do you like Jacksonville in that AFC South? And they're a team that, if they've got quarterback figured out, the weaponry around them is good. Now it's just about drafting BPA.
Yeah, they have a lot of talent, like you talked about. And I am not of one of the folks that believe Trevor Lawrence is not a good player. I think he still is a good player. I just feel like they just have been inconsistent, as has the entire team. Yeah. So if Cohen can get the best out of him, which we've seen him get the best out of multiple quarterbacks that he's worked with, and get him to play consistent, the talent is there to turn it around. Similar to what we saw Harbaugh do for Justin Herbert and get him to flatline his play. Because if that's the case, then Jacksonville has so much talent to really be a dynamic factor in the AFC. Not just a good team, but a team that could really look like what we saw them look like a couple of seasons ago when they had the big comeback, and where they had Kansas City early in that ball game, looked like they were going to, you know, be able to compete. But they're not that far off, to be honest.
Emery, I'll let you go on this, my friend. I know you mentioned you just started to dive into the quarterbacks in this class. Your order in which you have them, I know Shador and Cam are a lot of people's consensus, one and two. You believe in any of the hype about Jackson Dart potentially crawling his way up into round one?
No, because when you talk, you could instantly tell who truly evaluates talent. Because if Jackson Dart was your number three, then he would have been your number three all season. You would have been hearing about Jackson Dart is right there behind Shador and Cam. So anything that you're hearing now is truly based off one throw in a bowl game.
Which is crazy.
So if you go back to how one thing about me is consistency. So if you go back to August when I was on Inside College Football, my top five was Shador, Cam, Milroe, Brady Cook, Caden Salter, and Brady Cook out of Missouri. So Salter goes back, so that pushes Cook up to four, but the top three has still remained in terms of Shador, Cam, and Milroe, and that's how I see it, because at the end of the day, you know, if you put the work in, the tape tells you that. So anything that you're hearing about Jackson Dart is legitimately based off the one throw in the bowl game and everyone kind of talking themselves up at the Senior Bowl about Jackson Dart.
And between the top two guys, Emery, Shador and Cam Ward, do you have a preference out of those two guys?
Both guys can win exceptionally well. They just play the position differently, which is great because you could like multiple players at the same time. It just on what one guy you want that maybe fits your offense a little bit better. So I just feel like when you're talking about Shador or Cam, they are both plug-and-play guys.
Yeah, hopefully they can have success right away. Similarly to our guy Jaden Daniels here in Washington. Emery, I appreciate you as always, my brother. Giving us some time. We'll do it again soon, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man.
That is Emery Hunt, one of the absolute best, talking all things college football as well as the National Football League. Check out his work on the X app at F-Ball Game Plan. Want to talk about somebody that does not buy into the consensus when it comes to draft time. That is Emery Hunt. Always different when it comes to his scouting report. He does the homework. He grinds the tape. Is why he's somebody that I think pretty highly of. Before we take a quick timeout, let's go to Rob in D.C. What's up, Rob?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Man, I was just commenting on, you know, the organization just trying to get a blueprint of similar to what Philly trying to do. Build that offensive lineup and that D lineup. It all starts there. So if we're going to compete and, you know, go to that next level, we have to get the lines intact. It's what it's all about, the physicality. You seen it last night. It's nothing new, nothing different. I mean, that's just what it is. So, hopefully we can focus in on that. I don't know what the Payne and Jonathan Allen thing going to look like, the edge rusher. But so in order for us to compete, we have to get that foundation, them two lines inside out. Starts inside out, and we have to get that taken care of, Linnell. It's as simple as that. If we come out next year and the lines are not together, we're going to end up with the same results. So you have to just build your lines up and be able to compete with the physicality of going against Philly. Just for example, you know, going against them just right off the bat, you already know you got to bring it when you face them. So that's just my two cents, Linnell.
Can you build up the trenches? I know that's the question of the offseason. I appreciate you chiming in. As always, 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Final hour of power coming up here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. At about 9:30, our pal Law Murray, who covers the NBA for The Athletic, he will join us. We'll get his thoughts on Luka Doncic making his debut with the Lakers tonight. We'll get his thoughts on the Wizards post-trade deadline. And he also covers the Clippers' Ben Simmons. Signing with L.A. After he was bought out by the Brooklyn Nets. Law Murray joins us at 9:30. When we come back, though, we will take a spin around the National Football League and look at some of the top rumors that we got over Super Bowl week, including Aaron Rodgers reportedly on the way out of New York. My thoughts on that and a whole lot more next here on Overtime.